Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Tim McGraw. I've actually seen Tim McGraw in concert.
Six lanes, tail lights, red ants marching into the night. They disappear to the left.
Can't say I'm the biggest fan, but I don't mind his music. Alex Hong just joins me from Georgia, where they love this music. Are you a country guy?
Not really. I'm not against country music. I had a phase where I was into it, but it's not really my thing.
All right. So, but you're not against it. You're not anti country music.
Yeah, I'm definitely not anti-country music. I mean, there's times maybe where I'll say, come on, man, I really don't want to listen to this shit. But as a general rule, there's not really any music I'm not cool with. As long as it's good, I'm cool, you know?
Right. Although jazz sucks. You have to admit, jazz sucks.
It is boring. I suppose in the right environment, though, I might be into it. The biggest musical complaint I have lately...
Hey, what's the right environment for jazz? Like,
maybe I like the right bar.
Oh, okay.
You know?
I was going to say, if a really hot-looking chick likes it, and that's the right... And so you're into it, too.
Yeah, that's the right environment, exactly. Yeah. My daughter, who's only 10 months old, has absolutely fallen in love with Adam Levine from Maroon 5.
Yeah, come on.
I'm really not ready for this, man. Like, you know, my wife just, like, left the TV playing on YouTube with music going while we were cleaning the other day. And when the Maroon 5 video came on, my daughter went from, like, meltdown, temper tantrum to silent, smiling, and staring in, like, 2 seconds flat. And I was like, it's got to just be the video. You know, maybe it's, like, stimulating colors. So later on in the day, we tried a different Maroon 5 video, and the same thing happened. Like, she's already...
Come on.
After the lead singer of Maroon 5, I'm not ready for this.
That's impossible. She has to be mesmerized by the motion or something. Come on.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Put some Def Leppard or who's got to really put some Post Malone up there. He's ugly. This is interesting. I didn't know Post Malone was white.
And I'm barely even cognizant of who Post Malone is. He's a rapper, right?
Yeah, so Post Malone is a rap guy, okay? And
is he one of these new rap dudes whose, like, faces look like the bottom of a desk in detention, where it's just, like, covered in, like, doodle tattoos and shit?
That's him. That is straight up my boy Post Malone.
Okay, I'm tracking him.
Yeah, you're tracking him. So, and this is his, let's see, hold on. This is what he's most noted for. A song called Rockstar, okay? It was all, I don't know how long ago. Late last year, last winter. He's a baller, right? If you listen to this song, you're legit. So I always put it on when I drive around. Just like a rockstar. All my brothers got that gas and they always be smoking like a rockstar. Fucking with me, call up on no Uzi and show up, man, them the shot toss. So he's on a private jet headed for France or someplace after some award show in New York City. And I don't know how this happened, but they blew two tires on takeoff. Now, the only way I know that happens is if you have your brake on and you're on a catapult. Yeah, and they throw you off the aircraft carrier with your brake on and your tires melt as you go down the non-skid.
Yeah.
How you blow two tires when you're taking off of a commercial jetliner or a private jetliner, a Lear or some shit like that, like, I'm not exactly sure. But anyway...
You know, there's been a number of these surprising problems. Like, I wasn't aware that the pilots had to manually pressurize the cabin on these flights until they didn't this past week. There's been a lot of interesting failures of commercial flights as of late that I'm surprised and awestruck that it's so easy to screw up. It's so easy to screw up pressurizing the plane or not popping the tires on takeoff, you know?
You're not supposed to do that, right? So anyway, there's a headline. Plane with rap artist Post Malone going to make an emergency landing at Peterborough Airport in New Jersey, just across the river from Manhattan. And all of a sudden, they put this picture up, and the dude's got tattoos on his face. He's got frizzy hair that's pulled back in a ponytail, and he's got something on his teeth. I don't think they're braces. I think it's some other cool thing that I'm not really privy to. And I'm like, that's a white dude. That's not Post Malone. That's not the guy I heard, right? That's not the guy I heard singing this. When my homies pull up on your block, they make that thing go ratatata. Okay, when your homies pull up on the block and make that thing go ratatata, they're not wearing yarmulkes, bro. Not in that song. Right? And I look, and Post Malone. Malone, that's an Irish name. It's not a Jewish name. There's no guys named Malone that are Jewish. Like, what the hell is going on? So I'm talking to my daughter, right? And I said, is Post Malone a white guy? And she's like, hello, where have you been? I'm like, look, all I do is listen to the song, okay? And so then, okay, so listen to the song here for another 15 or 20 seconds. So this is actually a duet with somebody else. It features 21 Savage, okay, whoever that dude is. So 21 Savage, if this guy's a white guy, I'm like, I'm not going to listen to music anymore, okay? I'm going to turn in my card. Here he is. Hold on, it'll come up in a second. Yeah, that's a Jewish guy? What planet am I on all of a sudden? The song is legit, though. I'm going to write my own lyrics and call it Black Blood.
This just goes to show how lame I am that this is the first time I've ever heard this song. I'm being introduced to popular music on Almarine Radio right now.
It's not,
in real time.
Yeah, real time, rap, popular music, chart topper, okay. On Almarine Radio by a dude that's 60 years old. All right, hold on. Here's the other dude. Superstars feeling like a pop star. If this dude's white, I'm ending it. Any bad bitches jumping in the pool and they ain't got no bra. Get a front of back, pulling on a tr- My daughter says, Dad, you're safe. He's black.
Well, I've been learning this week because, you know, my wife has been trying to put on music videos while we clean it. We tend to play music while we clean the house,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, while we're all cleaning up, our daughter isn't being actively engaged by either of us, you know? So now we're throwing on music videos, but we're trying to choose videos that aren't, you know, that are okay for a 10-month-old to be mesmerized
by. She's not going
to
know, right? It's not like she's going to be flashing gang signs. I mean, she's a little doofus right now, other than her she's in love with Adam Levine.
I'm honestly even cool with, like, naked ladies running around, to be perfectly frank, because my daughter is going to be a woman one day. I don't think she should be that worried about seeing cleavage, you know?
Right.
But I do try to keep her away from, like, that Donald Glover music video that a bunch of people got riled up about. The video itself seems fine to me for the most part, but in two scenes, there's, like, a pretty graphic shot of him killing somebody with a gun.
Yeah, I'm not for that.
I try to keep her away from that stuff. Honestly, naked ladies I'm not worried about, you know, jumping around, being crazy with gang signs I'm not worried about. But I do try to keep her away from that stuff for now.
Right.
But you're probably right. I bet you she's not even processing it, and it's just my own paranoia I'm projecting, you know? It is.
You know what? That's exactly it. You're projecting your own neurotic, paranoid thoughts into, like, a blank slate. And they look at you like, dude, this dude's out of his mind. Like, he's a giant.
You're right, you know? Well, I mean, part of it comes from, like, that inherent guilt every parent, I think, feels when you let your kid watch TV. You know, like my daughter's 10 months old. She's got no reason to be watching TV. Every once in a while, though, I need to plop her down in her playtime so that I can go to the bathroom without her killing herself.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, why would you feel guilty about that? It's a great babysitter.
You know, but when you talk to other parents, like, you're afraid to say it. Like, oh, I let my daughter watch Paw Patrol.
No. Let me just give you some parenting advice. You're not going to get better parenting advice. First of all, with those people and their fucked up kids, don't listen to anything they have to say because they're stupid. Right? Their biggest thing is they don't want to upset their kid. And watch what happens to their kid when they look at them and say no. Their kid just blows it off. Your kid, don't raise your kid like that.
That is one thing, actually, since the last time we spoke about it. I think it might have been the show before last that I was on. Making sure she understands no before she's 2 years old.
Yeah.
You know, your father-in-law's lesson. I've been trying really hard to implement that. I'm getting... It's more a matter of my own discipline.
I know. I know. It's you. She'll do it. She's like a dog.
Yeah.
She's like a dog. She'll do it if you train her to do it. And it's an investment for her life. The structure, the structure that she needs. But your piece of shit friends and their parenting, don't ever listen to that shit. And don't ever let me hear you say that shit again.
Oh, deal. That's a deal. All right.
don't ever, or else I'll come the next time I swing through the South, I will come to Georgia, and I'll slap that bushy beard of yours, like, so hard. Now, go ahead.
I was raised by TV.
Tell me no now. Will you say no now? Don't slap me in the mug anymore, Mac, please?
Yeah, right. You know, I was raised by TV, but in large part because my parents weren't very good parents. But I've made the argument both ways, that my parents did this and I turned out fine, and my parents did this and I did not turn out fine.
I would tell you that TV doesn't have anything to do with it. How about that?
I buy that completely.
TV's just another thing that parents use as a crutch for their own lack of parenting skills, their own inability to install structure and mentor their kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they're looking for a reason.
Why is my kid fucked up? My kid watches too much TV. Well, whose fault's that? Where is that?
Why aren't you engaging with them? I still to this day watch Star Trek: The Next Generation. God, man, probably every day. That's why I don't know who Post Malone is. I'm watching Star Trek: The Next Generation and The West Wing because I'm 15 years behind television.
Oh my God!
Honestly, I'm kind of impressed with The West Wing. I really expected there to be more heavy-handed partisan politics that I wouldn't be able to stomach, but there really isn't. It's not a bad show.
We're finally around the bend, aren't we?
Yeah, I hit the year 2000 with my television viewing. We finally hit it. I was still in like the late 80s until recently.
We're finally around the bend. Well, congratulations to that.
Yeah, thank you. You know, maybe eventually I'll hit Game of Thrones, probably by the 2030s.
That's when you know you'll be complete. When you've completely lost your mind, you're watching Game of Thrones. I had friends that watched it. One of my daughters was watching it. So I said, it's like the stupidest shit I've ever seen. It's like monsters that come back alive. It's like, would you waste your time with this? I mean, isn't there porn we could watch? Like,
that's the thing I don't understand about, like, people are regularly like, yeah, but dude, the girls in the show were hot. The internet is full of naked women.
Exactly.
If that's what you're looking for, like, if you're like, oh, man, I got to get home in time for Game of Thrones to see this girl naked, I've got a surprise for you. You know, like, Google literally anything.
Yeah.
By the sixth page, you'll find porn. You know? You know, to each their own. If that's what you're into, that's what you're into. As the guy who's still watching Star Trek: The Next Generation, and am I really in any position to judge? Not really. You know?
No. Don't ever, like, of course I am. Of course I am. I'm smarter than most people on the planet. And therefore, it gives me the right to judge. And I will sin in judgment because that's what I do.
It's a continuation of the Lord of the Rings thing for me, man. And, like, I understand that there are some real smart, really cool people that love Lord of the Rings. It is the most boring series of books, the most boring series of films I have ever come across in my entire life. I'm not a Star Wars fan, but I will happily watch the prequels over Lord of the Rings. I mean, if anything, just because I can make fun of the prequels. But I've got to tell you, man, most modern movies, I don't know, they've missed the mark for me. But I'm not the target demographic.
What's the last good? What's the last good movie you've seen?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, there's definitely good movies. I just recently watched Sicario, finally. That's a great movie.
What did you watch?
Sicario.
What's Sicario?
It's got Emily Blunt in it. It's got James Brolin, the guy that played Thanos. It's about, like, basically some CIA guys who claim to be, you know, OGA, other government agencies.
OGA.
Trying to take care of Mexican cartels just over the border. I thought that it was an Oscar bait film when I heard, like, the buzz about it, so I kind of ignored it. But I watched it recently, and honestly, man, it's really, fantastic.
Explain what OGA is.
Other government agency is really a bullshit term that contractors, or, you know, to be fair, I'm sure some guys that are like CIA affiliated or what have you,
right,
will call themselves OGA, which means we're an other governmental agency. So you don't know who I answer to, but you're supposed to call me sir and be impressed with my presence and do what I say, is usually the premise behind claiming to be OGA. You know, it's a good way to spot bullshitters on Twitter when they're claiming that they were secret squirrels. You know, like, I did a bunch of OGA missions. More often than not, if you're the type of guy who was affiliated with, let's say, the CIA working as a contractor, you're usually not also the guy chiming in about Rosie O'Donnell on Twitter. The internet's a crazy place, man. You know, I have seen guys lie their way into rooms with qualified, capable people through sheer audacity. You know, it's the power of the internet. It's amazing. But yeah. But Sicario's, honestly, the way that they represent, I would argue, CQB tactics and stuff like that is,
ooh,
you know, maybe not entirely, you know, to the letter realistic, but very realistic depiction of CQB tactics. You know, they've got
CQB. Explain. Hey, hold on there, Dan Daly. Explain CQB.
Close quarters battle. You know, like clearing rooms, being in a firefight within an enclosed space. They do a good job of showing not just the way that you would kind of do it, but I think they do a good job of showing the different ways in which people would do it.
How smart do you think the guy is who made up that term?
I'm pretty crafty. Yeah. I mean, well, it depends. If he made it while he was wearing a uniform, he did it because the military can't not do acronyms.
What do we call this thing? Hey, ask Larry. He's always good at coming up with names.
I'm telling you, it was like a DS-15 who got paid like $350,000 that year, and that's the only decision he made.
Close quarters battle.
What other situation do you use the word battle in an acronym? Very rarely.
Battle.
You know?
No, that's like Navy. That's like Navy shit. The Battle of the Coral Sea the Battle of the Lady Gulf, you know?
There's a Delta element, there's CIA element, stuff like that. They do a good job of showing how they interact. I think it's good.
All right. You know, the cool thing about Delta guys is you don't know they're Delta guys. They don't tell you. If somehow or other you find out, it will be normally because a SEAL in the room told you that guy's a Delta guy.
I got to tell you, the most impressive man I have ever met in my life, he's a coworker of mine to this day. His name is George Hand. He's a common contributor on NewsRep. I recommend reading his stuff. He's the best writer we've got. But
George Hand?
Was Delta for a long time. George Hand. And he's written some incredible pieces. The most incredible one, I actually nominated him for a Pulitzer for. I submitted it to the Pulitzer Committee.
Wow.
He wrote about, you know, he was in Delta for, you know, over 10 years. He was in the Army for almost 30. He's done, you know, the large list of things that he's done is incredible.
Right.
But the most important story he ever wrote was about his attempted suicide. After he got out, he went into, you know, a spiral, as a lot of guys do, you know, but hearing it from a guy like George Hand, who now works for the Deliver Fund, helping combat human trafficking, this guy's a hero, you know? And to hear him talk about his weakest points, you know, this guy who, for all intents and purposes, doesn't have any weaknesses, for him to tell you about how human he is and how close he came to ending his own life, I think is important, you know? But you're totally right. The way I found out what a badass George Hand is I was doing a tour of a prison facility that was being converted for CCP training.
In where, in Alabama? Georgia?
It was here in Georgia. It was a couple hours away, Eatonton, Georgia. It was Titan Tacticals facility. And when I was there, I met a guy who was there from the CIA, and I met a guy who was there from CAG, which is, for all intents and purposes, Delta. And the CIA guy never gave me his name, but he knew that my security clearance had lapsed, so he had obviously Googled me. The CAG guy did give me his name, but it eludes me now. But as we're walking around the prison, doing the tour, looking around at stuff, you know, we're using flashlights because the facility hadn't been updated yet. I mentioned George in conversation while we were talking, and both of them stopped what they were doing and went, "Do you know George Hand?" And I said, I work with him. He's a really nice guy. Do you guys know him? And both of them were like, "Oh, no, I've never met him. I know him by reputation alone." So when these two guys said that to me, I was like, "Oh, shit. I think maybe I ought to ask George what it is that he did before he was a writer for News Friends." You know, but I could tell stories about George Hand all day, but I'm afraid that he would be mad about some of them. But I highly recommend looking up George Hand, not just on NewsRep, but look him up on social media. He's regularly posting things from stakeouts he's on, fighting human trafficking. He's a G.I. Joe guy. You know, he's in his 60s and he's still out there fighting a good fight. Wow. He's a hero of mine.
Right.
But that's Delta, man.
Yeah, they don't. You know? Yeah, you don't find out too much about those guys. They're pretty tightly lipped. And you know what? And that's the way it's supposed to be. But I've dealt with OGA guys, and they think they're invisible. Like they'd be driving around Iraq in their Mercedes or BMW, right? And then they come up to the gate, and they can't get let in the gate. Then all of a sudden you get a phone call. Hey, so and so's here. He says he's supposed to talk to you. He's obviously an American guy. But sir, we don't have him on any list, and you know, we're not letting him in. All right, hold on. Hey, Mac, this is Larry. I got Shemp in the car. Can you tell these guys to let us in? We're supposed to meet with blah 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 today. Yeah. Okay, stand by. Yep, that's him. Can you see him? Is he invisible? The Marines start laughing. No, sir, we can see him. All right, if he turns invisible, shoot him. Yes, sir. yes, sir. But it's just, you're like, really? But anyway, they're part of the fight, and, you know, God bless them.
And that's important.
Right.
And I do understand to a certain extent not wanting to advertise these wide over open channels what agencies arriving right now. I guess I get a little bit more touchy about it when we're behind closed doors having a private conversation and you still want to play that game.
Right.
You know, but I get it. Often, it's not even your fault. It's that someone else told you not to tell me. I understand, you know, but it can be frustrating when you're on the same side and the other guy doesn't seem like he's being honest. You know? Yeah. Especially from my standpoint, I was very rarely working. I worked security like I was the guy at the ECP that was calling you. You know what I mean?
And let me tell you, and those guys are having none of it either. They're like, look, you can say anything, bro. You're not on this list. You ain't getting in unless somebody else says you're getting in.
When you're working ECP in a country like Mozambique, as I did for some time, that's the one time today I get to do any marining.
Right.
You know, is when you show up and I can't let you in. This is the one time I get to do what I'm here to do.
Yeah.
The rest of the time it's on a fucking truck moving out.
Which is to say no. That's my job. That's what I do here because I've been taking shit. I've been doing filling sandbags, and now I get to say no to you, motherfucker. Yeah. You know what the answer is? No. But.
You know, I will say this. I made the unfortunate mistake of taking that hard line with a major who worked in the S2 for another regiment when we were out there, and I wouldn't let him leave because they hadn't filed a manifest. I was manning the radio. You know, I had some Lance Corporals out of the ECP, and I wouldn't clear them to leave because they hadn't given me a clear list of who was leaving with them. And because of that, he contacted my battalion commander, who contacted the regimental commander, who thought it was hilarious Yeah. But renamed me and my Marines Task Force Rape Whipple. the rest of the deployment. So you do pay your dues sometimes for being a hard ass.
Yeah. But it's what we're taught in the Marine Corps, right? First general order to walk this post from flank to flank and fuck with anybody no matter the rank. You're a Marine on post, man. You get raised to do that.
Yeah, man. And honestly, I think most Marines get a little excited when they're like, here's my chance to show you that I know how to Marine. You know, I've spent the rest of this day eating fucking Reese's Pieces out of an MRE that I don't want to eat and counting backpacks on trucks. Yeah, I'm going to give you a hard time.
Yeah,
you know?
No shit. My guest, Alex Hollings from formerly of Soft Rep, now of News Rep. I've got an email here that is asking a question, but before we do that, you branched out a little bit. Can we talk about that or not?
Yeah, man. It's been a big couple of weeks for me. First plug, my book went on sale, about a week and a half ago. It did really well right out the door. And I got to thank you for that because I think that All Marine Radio was the first bit of publicity I did after the book went on sale. And I ended up, you know, within its own little subcategory, it was a number 5 bestseller on Amazon.
Boom.
You know?
Yeah, the marketing power of the juggernaut that is All Marine Radio.
That's what I'm saying, man. I don't know how much money I'm going to make off royalties yet. I haven't heard, but I'm assuming at least one good bottle of booze minimum.
At least. But you know what? I'm writing a book, so I'm going to need your help. I need your counsel.
I would be happy to. Let me know anything I can do to help.
No, the book's entitled Post Traumatic Winning. It's going to be written for anybody who struggles with trauma and the aftermath of trauma, or anybody who's a friend of somebody and would like to help. And it's the stuff that has been passed down to me, the blue-collar mental health advice that I've received, and I've never received better advice than I have from other people that have lived with it. And so,
and you and I have discussed this before, and this is not just a great idea for a book. It's important. You know, and when the time comes, let me know, and I will help you broadcast that on every channel I've got. We can lock down an interview. You know, we can do a book review on the site. You know, I would be more than happy to try to get as much traction under that endeavor.
Right. No, it's exciting. I spent all weekend working on a new website and Facebook page and Twitter account and all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's all titled Post Traumatic Winning. And what it's designed to do is give people hope. You know, sometimes you get hit by a car in life, but it doesn't mean you can't be happy. To quote Elizabeth Smart, who is who's one of the patron saints of it. I'd love to meet her one day. She has every ticket punched to be a dysfunctional human being and take her own life, as does my sister. Yet they don't, and they should be examples to all of us who live with trauma in our lives that we can do it. They do it. We can do it. But you know what? There is a certain amount of education that you need. It gets really frustrating because you're not going to get over it, and so. You know, the first piece of education is somebody looking at you saying, yo, stupid, you're not going to get over it. You realize that, right? I'm not. What about time heals all wounds? What about just get over it?
It's bullshit, man. Yeah. It's bullshit.
Who's telling you that shit? Well,
I even really like things get better with time. They do. But then bad days come and they feel just as bad as they did 10 years ago.
Yes. Yes. You know? That's what, let me tell you, and this segues us into, we have to talk about this, and then we're going to talk about that first. But I was watching those hearings last week, and that woman testified about Judge Kavanaugh, right? The traumatic events that have occurred in my life, I can tell you in high-definition, slow motion what happened. That thing is laser blasted onto the side of my brain housing group, right? I wish I could send the son of a bitch out and not remember it. So I don't, and again, I'm not throwing rocks. Well, I kind of am, but I'm just saying, that's the whole nature of the trauma, right? It's there vividly. What week? I could tell you what week. Where I was, I could tell you exactly where the fuck I was. So I didn't understand that. Okay, We'll come back to that in a second because somebody wants to know what you thought about that last week. But talk about your book's out, and there's another piece of it too.
Yeah. Well, so before I go any further, I realized I didn't mention it. The book is called The Perception Wars. It's for sale on Amazon right now. I highly encourage anybody who's interested in how information operations are being conducted, you know, American, Russian, North Korean, Chinese. It's in the news again now because Donald Trump recently said that China is trying to meddle with the midterm election.
Hello.
The book is not just an exploration in how these campaigns are currently being conducted, but it's an exploration in how these campaigns can be conducted. You know, it's I would argue, and it's self-serving, that it's the start of a way to inoculate yourself against fake news. That's not just coming from the media, if you don't like the media, but coming from national level efforts, which are more common than you might think. But on top of that, I also, I did an article. At first, it was going to be a one-time thing for Popular Mechanics. I was analyzing Chinese fighter jets and really just how they stole or purchased most of their production technology from foreign governments, primarily Russia and the United States. But working with those guys was great. I really enjoyed it. I'm working on another story for them right now, too. So you'll be seeing me more often on Popular Mechanics in the future, too.
Yeah, talk about that. The Popular Mechanics, that's like no small deal, bro.
Man, it's been like one of my favorite publications since I was a kid. And when I was looking for ways to get a little more publicity for the book, you know what I mean? So I'm branching out to some other websites, talking about doing some different kinds of work. I never expected to get a call back from Popular Mechanics. You know, I do a lot of work, and I work really hard, but I work for a small independent news outlet, you know? By very nature, that's a strength and a weakness. The strength of it is that we don't have sponsors pressuring us, and we don't have an editorial staff that pressures us about what kind of content to produce. The downside is, you know, people haven't necessarily heard a news rep as readily as they've heard of writing for Newsweek or Time or CNN.
Right.
So I really didn't expect to call back. And then when they called me back, they were not just, you know, great professionals, but they were really, really nice guys, you know, and it was a really pleasant experience working with them through, you know, the pitch portion of it, and then, you know, we did some outlining together to form up the story. They gave me great feedback on the editorial side. I got to tell you, I was worried that working with Popular Mechanics would be like this different beast,
right,
as compared to writing for a smaller outlet like I do. In truth, it's very similar, which I think is a testament to the news reps hierarchy as well, that even though it's a smaller organization, that same level of professionalism kind of permeates throughout. So honestly, man, I was well suited to just like walk in and start working with them, which you know was a blessing. It's been a real blast, and I'm looking forward to doing more stuff for them, if only because I can tell my mom that she can find my stuff in Popular Mechanics. You know, like,
I'm with you, man.
Next door neighbor is, his name's Grizzly, and you know, he's lived in the same house since he was born. He was there when they put plumbing in it. This is the Georgia Woods, you know. He's convinced that I'm unemployed, and you know, he comes down and knocks on my door, and he's like, "Hey, man, you know, the landscapers down the street, they put out a sign saying they're hiring $7 an hour to pick up some work." You know, and he's looking out for my family. I appreciate it, but I'm like, "No, man, I swear, I have an office right here in the house, and I work 12 hours a day." But so when I told him I was in Popular Mechanics, that was the first time that he was like,
oh,
I get it now. This is what you do.
So the dude who lives in the same house, he like, he knows Popular Mechanics, because that's kind of a surprise.
Honestly, everybody seems to. Everybody's familiar with Popular Mechanics, you know. When I called my mom and told her that I got hired by Sofrep, my mom was like, "What exactly is a Sofrep?" You know, but tell her you work for Popular Mechanics, and she gets pretty excited, you know. But kind of one of the things that I do love about working for news rep as well, though, there isn't as clearly defined a lane for working at news rep as there is at Popular Mechanics. You know, the story I'm working on for them right now is a retrospective on the Saturn V, which
talk to us about. So they look at your body of work and they And they say, yeah, we want this guy. So where does it go for there? Do you write a specific genre, you write specific types? Are you a generalist? And they assign you topics? How does it work when you write, when you do what you do for popular
content? I can't speak to what it's like for everybody on the staff, but thus far for me, it's been, I put together a portfolio at first that included some specific type of work that I had done for News Rep and Soft Rep because they were looking for something specific at the time. And I submitted the portfolio to a recruiting agency and was like, hey, you know, I'm not really looking for full-time work. I'm just, you know, putting some feelers out there, you know, let me know if they're interested. And did not expect to get an email back. I got an email back pretty quickly. They said that they liked my credentials and they liked the work and they were going to put it together and give it to the site director. And from there, I heard directly from the site director. And he was like, do you have any ideas for stories that you think would be good? I've always got, I write 3 stories a day for a News Rep, so I've always got a running tally.
How do you do that? Are you on a clock when you write stories?
With News Rep, I am to a certain extent. With Popular Mechanics, less so. With News Rep, I have a deadline every night by midnight. So I need to have, generally speaking, this is a little bit of insider baseball, but you don't always necessarily know that there's going to be important late-breaking news to discuss right away the following day.
Right.
So it's important that you've got content to run, even if there isn't a breaking story, right? So today, for instance, my job is to write evergreen content for tomorrow in the event that that tomorrow is a slow news day.
What is evergreen? It means it can go anywhere?
Evergreen basically means it's not going to expire. It's not going to go bad in the next 24 hours, right? So if the president comes out and says something crazy right now.
Donald Trump?
Can you imagine,
yeah.
Right? That's more of a this afternoon news cycle story, right? So if we're going to address that, we need to write the story quickly, we need to get it edited quickly, and we need to get it out quickly. Conversely, if I want to do a story about, like, for instance, one that I just wrote recently was analyzing some of the weaker points in the Chinese military. That doesn't need to run right away. That can post today at 4:30, or it can post tomorrow morning at 8. It can post the next day at 5, you know? So a big part of what my job is producing that non-expirable content in the lulls between big stories breaking, you know? So News Rep is much more time-sensitive. I'm writing stories to either post immediately, so I push through the editorial process as fast as we can, or I'm writing towards tomorrow to make sure we've got content up in the event no big fires break out, you know? With Popular Mechanics, on the other hand, it's all analytical. They have a team of guys that do breaking news, so they're not interested in talking to me about that. I have a job, you know, that I need to focus on all day, so I can only do their stuff in my off time. So it's more long-form analysis-type pieces. The first one was, you know, discussing 7 different aircraft platforms and, you know, what they were derived from out of the Soviet and American militaries. This next one is going to be an exploration in why the Saturn V is still, in my opinion, the most incredible engineering marvel human hands have ever touched.
Why is that?
You know, people tend to think rockets are rockets.
Yeah.
You know, we see Elon Musk launching these rockets, and they are fantastic.
I can go buy them at a hobby shop, for God's sake.
Absolutely. The Saturn V is the only rocket mankind has ever made that was powerful enough to take humans past low Earth orbit. The Saturn V is still the most powerful rocket we have ever made. The Saturn V is so powerful, like the Falcon Heavy, which is the most powerful operational rocket on the planet, you could put most of a Falcon Heavy as the carryable payload of a Saturn V and launch it to the moon. The Saturn V was a monster of a rocket. And what's even more incredible about it is that in 1961...
So we just made a rocket and made it bigger. What's the big deal?
The engineering feat that it takes to keep a rocket like that together with that much power and that much force. Especially that fast and in that era. In 1961, Kennedy said, we need to hurry up and get to the moon, effectively because the Soviets were kicking our asses in the space race.
Yeah.
You know, 57 Sputnik went up. NASA was founded.
Yeah, that freaked a few people out.
Absolutely. You know, and the Russians beat us with Sputnik, then they beat us with putting whatever the dog, I forgot the dog's name, but they put a dog in orbit. Then they put Yuri Gagarin in orbit. Yeah. You know, it was three strikes and we're out. We were looking bad. And so, you know, we formed NASA from 1961 to 1966 or 67, I think. That's all the time they took to build the Saturn V. From nothing to the most powerful rocket mankind has still ever made in 5 years, 5.5 years. And it was launched 13 times, 100% success rate with a couple complications. It's an incredible feat of engineering. We did it when we had no idea how to do it. You know, it's...
We're Americans. We can figure anything out.
I would argue the Saturn V is perhaps the best representation of what Americans can do. We tend to think landing on the moon is... I would argue landing on the moon was more an exercise in all the hard work and preparation and 10,000 engineers that put together the system that was capable of doing that. Neil Armstrong is a hero, Buzz Aldrin is a hero. They went along for the ride.
Right.
They took the risk. They got out of the rocket. But if it weren't for those 10,000 guys whose names we don't know, we would never have this calculator that's capable of taking us to the moon.
Yeah, and those black ladies that did math. What was
yeah,
that?
Absolutely. You know?
All those people. All those
Which
people.
Is another reason why I take such personal offense to people who claim we never went to the moon. You know, it's probably the most incredible
okay,
thing you've
ever done.
First
of all, why would you waste your time with those idiots?
Oh, for a little while, I wrote a series that was called Let's Make This Simple, and it was picking apart conspiracy theories, like the idea that 9/11 was an inside job, which is not only like a laughable and really just deeply disgusting conspiracy theory, but our nation's opponents even came out talking about how insane 9/11 was and how they know that it, like, Saudi Arabia acknowledged that the people came from Saudi Arabia that carried out this attack. There's no reason to suspect that 9/11 was an inside job other than just really wanting it to be one. You know, jet fuel can't melt steel beams, but it can absolutely compromise the structural integrity, which it turns out is what you need to hold up a skyscraper. It's a ludicrous and laughable type of conspiracy theory, but people tend to avoid the subject because you don't want to get those groups riled up. You don't want to engage with those groups.
You really don't. Okay, you really don't. Okay, hold on. You're gifted at fucking my show up. Okay, so you write for. Let me get to the email. You're brutal, man.
Okay.
You're a shitty interview. So what about your thoughts on last week? The oxygen was sucked out of the nation by what people watched on their TVs. Your thoughts on it?
I've got more of a macro perspective on this. I don't really necessarily want to weigh in on whether or not I believe one of them or I believe the other one of them. The general vibe I got from watching the entire thing was I don't trust anybody in this room from either side. What sucks about this is the position that our culture has created, or the climate our culture has created to produce this. On the one hand, you have three women who are claiming to have been sexually assaulted, and that is serious. That is a big deal. We shouldn't poo-poo that. We shouldn't be dismissive of it. That's a really big deal. On the other hand, we have a guy who's potentially being accused in a public forum of being a sexual predator without any real evidence to support it, and he's being the traditional innocent until proven guilty clearly doesn't apply in this scenario legally, but it also definitely doesn't apply to media coverage, to discussion, you know? So on the one hand, you potentially have three women who were victims of a terrible crime, and half the country isn't taking them seriously. Half the country sees them as the enemy. On the other hand, you potentially have a guy who didn't do anything wrong but is now being accused of being a sexual predator, with half the country not taking his claim seriously and already making their own decisions about him. That sucks. It sucks that we're in a situation where our Supreme Court justice nominee hearing is all about his yearbook and the calendar he filled out in 1982. It sucks that we're in a situation where women feasibly could go 40 years without reporting this kind of crime because they felt as though nothing would happen. No matter what, whether Brett Kavanaugh is innocent or guilty. This hearing is a representation of how fucked up our country is.
Well, let me ask you this. So, and I've had that kind of discussion with myself, and I've had it here on the air. Do we believe that it's ever been any other way, though? I mean, the Hearst organization succeeded in getting the United States in a war after the USS Maine blew up because of something that went wrong in their coal room in Havana Harbor, and we went to war because of that, largely because of the way the media reacted. If you go back and you read
it's
accounts...
It's important to note that Hearst owns Popular Mechanics. You know, just a full disclosure there.
Okay. Of course I'd... Mac, that was a completely legitimate news story. Of course it's ridiculous.
And now I'm fired.
Exactly. So here's my thing. Do we believe it's ever been any other way? Or is it different now because each political party has their own news organization and they don't have to worry about going out on the fringe because they know at least a news network will treat them well? Is it different? I don't. And again, what I keep getting is, no, it's not different. It's always been this way. And so that's what I'm struggling. Are we naive? I mean, Joe McCarthy. Hello?
It goes back. I mean, the first newspapers in the United States were very conspicuously partisan news outlets.
Rags.
You know? Absolutely. You know? And media in the United States has always been partisan. Media in the United States has always been subject to manipulation through either power or money. The media, journalism as a whole, as an industry, has never been perfect in the U.S. You know? However, I wouldn't argue that we have new problems, but I would argue that the problems we're facing are changing because of the technology we have. You know, it's just like there were absolutely problems plaguing, you know, the church prior to the advent of the printing press, but the printing press made it so everybody could have a Bible in their homes, and it took power away from the church. Things change with these new technologies, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. I'm not sure that we know how this results. I'm not sure that we know things change for the better or for the worse thanks to this digital revolution. So far, it's been for the worse. That doesn't mean it'll stay for the worse. You know, every new thing has setbacks. I don't think that this is a different problem than we've seen before. I don't think partisan politics is taking on any new shape. I think that everyone has always been relatively shady. People were always team players, choosing party over nation, you know, right on from the second president, because George Washington famously wasn't part of a party, right?
Right.
However, all of that said, just because there's a history of precedent, just because there's precedent behind something, doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't warrant analysis, right? This situation with Kavanaugh and with Dr. Ford and the other accusers might not be without precedent. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't look at it as an opportunity to recognize the cancer in our society.
So what is the precedent? The precedent is the common good. The precedent is civility. What is the, so that's what, as I kind
well,
of,
that's the thing.
As I kind
I
of pick this
that.
Apart. And so if you watch Joe McCarthy and those hearings, if you watched the hearings where the mafia was the Kefauver hearings. I can't remember if he was the guy where they have like Sam Giancana and those guys going, I don't know this thing, Cosa Nostra. I don't like, what are you talking about? And you look at the number of senators who sat there and didn't say a word. So I guess as we pull this apart, what are we, partisan politics? You see Cory Booker and Kamala Harris up there running for president. That's not without precedent. You see, so what exactly disturbs us about it?
Well, I think it's important. I think the important lesson to take away from this is to acknowledge that either or the parties that are involved in this debate. And that's really what it is. It's a debate and a discourse. It's an investigation. It's not an official judicial hearing where a sentence will be passed down. It's literally a conversation among powerful people trying to decide whether or not to believe these allegations or not. Excuse me, accusations. Allegations would be more of a legal term.
Yeah.
It's important for us to recognize that either one party is actively subverting the truth in the interest of party politics over what's best for the nation. Chances are very good.
Yeah, but that's that's the way politics is. I offer you Ray Mabus when he knew the Marine Corps' ground combat integration study was going to come out, and it didn't support, you know, women in ground combat. It was gonna report that mixed gender units performed poorer than all male units. Okay,
when you draw comparisons to history, what you need to remember is all of the other variables that are in play. For instance, in this situation, this hearing would have been world news. It would have been national news, regardless. But because it abuts the Me Too movement, because it's in the middle of a resurgence in female empowerment, because people are opposed to President Trump and they think that he represents this sexist, this fascist government, the variables are in play to give this more political clout than it would otherwise have had, right?
No doubt.
So even if we've seen the exact same circumstances come up before within that Senate hearing, we haven't necessarily seen the same social, political, you know, circumstances arise surrounding the outside of that. This is the way that things change. Things don't change usually the first effort through. You know, the civil rights movement didn't last a weekend. The civil rights movement lasted, I mean, you could argue to this day.
But what's going to change, though? So what would change? The news networks cannot get enough of this, right? I mean, the booksellers cannot get enough of this. And so
the best we can hope for is that this is going to be another one of the straws that eventually leads the public to looking for a more civil discourse. The only way our politicians change is if their voter base changes and forces them to. Your constituents have to decide what you're going to do. And the only way they can decide that is, in all honesty, with negative reinforcement. You know, a lot of these people run barely opposed. A lot of these senators and congressmen, you know, they've been in the same seat for decades. It's all but a sure thing that they're going to keep their job because people aren't paying attention to what they're doing. If people do start paying attention to what they're doing and things like this, for instance, it's a step towards giving a shit about elections that aren't just for the president.
Stop it.
And that step towards giving a shit is how things actually do.
You're going to start selling me the little engine that could. And
this country is built on little engines that could, man.
George Washington, he cared about this country. We need to do it too. Yeah, you know, don't go down that road with me, Mickey.
This officer in the Marine Corps retired and started a radio show.
He likes her own
and
words.
You know, he's got a best-selling book thanks to the plugs he put on that radio show. You know, the little engine that could.
All right, don't ever shove my own words up my ass again, or you'll never come back on this program. All right, our hour is up. Give me, what are you writing about this week?
Right now I'm working on a piece, actually. I'm working on kind of a puff piece, but it's awesome. There's a Ukrainian Su-24 that did, like, the world's lowest flyby. This guy is laying on the tarmac of this airstrip in Ukraine, and the Su-24 flies so far, or so low over him, I feel like he probably would have hit him if he was standing up. So I'm putting together a puff piece right now, that evergreen content I was telling you about, that you can run whatever. But I do have some great pieces coming out this week, analyzing the strengths and weaknesses of the Chinese military, as well as a bit of the Russian military. China's propaganda campaign is far more nuanced than Russia's, so we tend to disregard them as a threat, but they're really the much more formidable one. So you're going to be seeing a lot more content analyzing what kind of a threat and what we can do to mitigate it, you know, this coming week.
Got it. Interesting. All right, Alex Holling, my guest. Tell everybody where they find your work. And your book.
You can find my work on thenewsrep.com. You can also find it on alexholling.com. Go buy my book called The Perception Wars. It's available on Amazon, or you can find it right there on my website. You can find me on Facebook at Alex Holling's Writer, and you can find me on Twitter at AlexHolling52.
All right. All right. I'm going to give you a call. Might not be today, but this week. And you can make me smart about how books get made and how they get and because
honestly,
again,
man, I would be more than happy to help any way I can.
Because
it's an awesome idea for a book. It's an important topic.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited because I've never, ever sat down with anybody and talked about this stuff and had them not look at me and either give me a hug and say thank you so much and subsequently contact me and say, dude, that stuff changed my life. And none of it is original to me. It's things that other people have told me, and they pinged in me because my life had been touched by trauma. So I was interested in it, and I engaged them. And so sharing that, and I said this to you before, but I'll say it again. At least in the military, we talk about trauma. It's, you know, we deal with it. As a civilian, you don't talk about it until it enters your life. And even then, you may not talk about it, you know, because there's people that don't want to talk about it in your family. And so so we have something to offer. And we can help. We can ease their pain. And it is completely in line with the purpose-driven lives that I think most of us tend to want to lead. And it helps. So I'm fired up about
it. Take that Dragon Naturally Speaking, you know, program.
Right.
And just write out what you just said, and you've got an introduction to the book right there. It's going to get me to buy it.
No, yeah, honestly, you know? Honestly, and it's plain spoken. Again, a lot of this stuff existed in the enlisted Marine Corps, right? This is the hand-me-downs of you're never going to get over this was from my gunny given to him by other NCOs and staff NCOs, right? That is the oral tradition of mental health in the Marine Corps. Plain spoken, right, direct, unvarnished. You're not going to get over this, but you will learn how to live with it.
And honestly, that's kind of that eliminates the barrier for entry that a lot of people experience when they're looking for help when it comes to things like mental health. You don't want to pick up a book written by a psychologist that's going to not only sound academic and dry, but it's going to bore you. It's going to become homework that stresses you out more, you know? By reading a book where it's discussed like a real human person who's not writing a thesis paper for grad school but is trying to convey the message to you in a way you understand, it's something that's kind of missing, you know, from the discussion right now. And I think it's important.
No,
about this that a guy like me that would want to
read. Right, and not put it down. Like, holy shit.
Exactly.
Holy shit. Shit that you can do today to make your life be – and you know what? The most disciplined, the toughest, the most fierce, and the most selfless warriors on this world didn't become disabled pieces of trash simply by going to a conflict. I don't believe that. I never will. But most have been marginally changed. And those changes, while marginal, are significant. And if nobody teaches you how to live with that, you're looking for trouble. You're looking for trouble. So hopefully it'll address that. Alex Hollings, Mike.
Awesome.
Alex Hollings, the worst interview because he doesn't take direction well and he goes like a Saturn V rocket has been my guest the last hour. Is that right? Saturn V?
Saturn V, you got it.
Because got it. I was getting confused with Maroon 5 and all the rest of the shit we have going on today.
Doesn't take direction well and moves like a Saturn V rocket.
It's a compliment.
Put that on my sit rep.
It's a compliment. All right, have a good week. I will talk to you.
You too, man. Good talking to you.
Yeah, there you have it. Alex Hollings. We're going to take a break. The Gunner going to join us next. You know what? I think it's an interesting proposition. And the proposition is this. The proposition is it different or is it still the same? We just think it's different. There is still rampant partisanship. They are still not afraid to burn it down. There are still cowards among them that won't stand up and do the right thing. And ultimately, at the end of the day, did Jeff Flake do the right thing? What he forced, what he gave a voice to is the moderates on both sides that are trying to find a middle ground. What's the right thing to do? do we believe her? Do we believe him? Can we get the FBI involved in this to at least help us with this? So I'll ask Mike that. I'll ask Mike that. So anyway, the Gunner joins us next on a Monday edition, the first day of October edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Honestly, it is your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.